It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am joined today in our annual wrap-up of the news. This will only take a second with our beloved Aaron Keck.
Hello.
Aaron, I've missed you. You haven't been on the show in a while. I've missed you.
I like being on the show. This is fun.
It is too much fun having you because we agree on so much and yet so little sometimes. So it's the end of the year, and we know it, to rip off. Is that
REM?
Yeah. Sorry, REM, but, you know, it's too good.
Oh, they're fine.
They're fine. You know, we have to look back on this year, and, I feel like I need a neck collar for the whiplash.
Yeah.
It's just breathtaking.
There's a lot that has happened in 2018.
We thought
2016 was a news-filled year, and 2017 was a news-filled year, and they certainly were. And I'm not sure if there's a slowdown or if we've plateaued, but
it still feels like drinking out of a fire hose to me.
We're looking at all of the news stories that have happened in the last 11 and a half months, and there are huge things that have happened both locally and nationally that we look at and we say, oh yeah, that's right.
That's right.
That happened.
Oh, it really. Wasn't that 4 years ago? No, that was last month.
And that dominated everyone's attention for 2 months, and we've moved on to other things.
I do think that there's been a scientific breakthrough in the ability to stop time or arrest it or slow it down and protract the agony of a 24-hour cycle. You know, the idea, for example, that there is a news cycle anymore.
Yes.
There isn't. There's just rat-a-tat-tat of uncontrolled blasting of non sequiturs.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Which is great for the cable news networks that have all of that time to fill, right?
Yeah,
because
they do. They're not running a lot of B-roll anymore.
They just got the next thing.
They were
looking for things to say, and now they don't have to worry about that.
And
so
now
we're living in a CNN world. It's fantastic.
I mean, a lot of their time is spent saying, we're going to show you this. We don't know what to say about it. But roll the video.
Yeah.
You know, and it rolls for 90 seconds. And then they come back to the desk and they go, yeah, I don't know what that was. I can't believe he did that. And now we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. You know, and that's what they do.
It happens on my show daily. It happens on your show too, you know.
What are you going to do? You just run out of we need bigger dictionaries. We need all the best words. We need a lot more. We need many, many more and newer words.
So how are we going to process all of the news from 2018?
We will do it expertly and randomly,
okay,
as always. So we want to talk about what we think are about 10. We're very scientific about that.
Yes.
About 10 of what we think are the most important North Carolina stories and Chapel Hill stories from 2018, and it's my hope that many of you listening are going to go, oh yeah, just like I did. Oh yeah, that was this year. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh man, I can't believe that happened.
So we've got a list of 10.
Yes.
That we're going to run down,
scientifically formulated
in some rough order.
Right. And by order, what we mean is there's no order at all.
We don't have a 10-9-8. We've got a list of 10.
We think we counted to 10, but you know, keep track.
We'll try
folks.
To work
you know,
our way up yeah, to the big
right.
stuff.
So which one would you say is the first that we'll discuss? We won't say it's the 10th. Meaning
yeah.
it's ranked in some way.
So I'm going to say of all of the many things that have happened in our community, one that has kind of dominated a lot of the conversation and taken a lot of attention but is in the grand scheme of things not as important as some of the other things that we'll get to later is the clear cutting of the PH Craig tract in
right.
Chapel Hill and Carrboro, which
right.
is this very large plot, many, what was it, 40 acres, something
I think,
like that,
right?
of trees, yeah, of forest in northern Chapel Hill, Carrboro that has existed. It's been used, trails run through it, people really enjoy it. It's not particularly visible from the road, so
right.
you're not going to see the big difference if you're just driving around. But if you're using that land and if you walk on the trails, it's an enormous difference
right.
when this land started to be clear cut, which it has.
Right.
And the fight is still actually going on against it, but the clear cutting is also going on at the same time. So.
And this is a piece of property that's owned by – it's privately owned
right.
by an individual, P.H. Craig, who you know, has been around in Chapel Hill for a very long time. And he sees himself as someone who is very concerned and protective about the quality of that land. And according to his side of the argument for doing this, he doesn't love the idea of doing this, but he wants to make sure that the trees and the land itself overall is in a healthy state. And he's received advice from experts telling him that the thing to do is to clear the land and let the trees grow back up again. So
true.
So, you know, it reminded me a little bit of the Lloyd Farm story when I was covering that for the paper in Carrboro, that during the public hearings there was testimony from residents who said they really didn't want to see this project go forward because they've been using that land. They've been going fishing and they've walked through it for various reasons and enjoyed the land in its natural state, and admitted during the public hearings that, of course, my friends and I, when we would go kite flying as kids, we knew we were trespassing, but we enjoyed the land and it was wonderful and all that. And I thought, you know, I don't even know how to describe
that is
what a curious position that is.
Political argument I have heard all year, because so many people, and I think this is a real epidemic in political discourse, that the vast majority of the arguments people make to support their positions are not the real reason for their positions. In fact, they don't even really believe the argument that they're making. If you turn around if you start talking about another issue 5 minutes later, they'll be making exactly the opposite argument. Nobody believes what they say anymore. So I think it's refreshing that people are willing to come forward and say, I don't want this land to be developed, and here's the specific reason why. Because I trespassed on this land when I was a child.
I expect my kids to do
happy
that.
Memories from that, and I want to be able to preserve those. Bully for the people who made that argument, because they're the real heroes.
Because they're the ones who are saying
they're the ones
what the
who
real
are
reason
actually
is.
Honest about why they,
saying, look,
they
I
want
love
something
fishing
to happen
here.
Or not
I don't,
happen.
I don't care that this is their property and they're perfectly free to develop it as they wish. They own the property. They put down the money. You know, I as the neighbor of this property have $0 interest, you know, invested in
We've
this.
Already moved
I don't care
beyond
about that. I've been using
this
a long
point.
Time, right?
We've already moved beyond the Craig Tract. So
right,
Craig
so.
Tract, clear cutting, Lloyd Farm, the development went through in Carrboro. That's
after
a big deal.
Quite a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's that reminds me, by the way, not on our list of the Carrboro Public Library that's, you know, kind of been on the burner somewhere since,
yep.
you know, since what, we were in high school or something. And some of the first people who were advocating for that, you know, have grown up. They were the kids involved who their parents were saying, build this library. And now they're grown up and have kids of their own.
Oh.
And they're going with strollers to the meeting saying, yes, please.
From my understanding, Benjamin Franklin opened the first library in Philadelphia in 1750. And immediately there were some folks
in Carrboro,
what eventually became
yeah.
Carrboro, who said, we should model that, and the conversation's been going
and
on
that's,
ever since.
And that's when it began. I think that's probably exactly right.
So that's
we're
our thing number one.
Good Lord, we're never going to make it. Okay. So we can quickly take care of this one. You know, light rail, not much controversy there.
Only a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, also, that's also about land use
yes.
and a lot of money. And here's my theory about light rail. Just put aside the issue of some consultant who was, you know, a criminal, and let's just leave that for another program. Here's the thing I see about light rail is that it seems like to me that this area, and to me, we think of the Triangle obviously as including Raleigh, but in the light rail debate, we're talking about Durham and Orange counties.
Right.
there's going to be a thing where this community can only grow to a certain size, you know, and then it's going to stop. It's just going to be stymied because you've got to have more mass transit. You've mm-hmm. just got to. If you're going to have big cities and big developments and big growth like that, you can't do this with only cars. I mean, for heaven's sake, you either have to have a whole lot more buses or just some other version of mass transit. You also have two university towns in Durham and Chapel Hill, and Orange County, but we're talking about Chapel Hill, you know, who have big universities and big, big hospitals. And people in each of those communities work in the other communities. They need transit every day back and forth to work. You have other needs for that transportation. But for that workforce, the people who are going to benefit from this, a lot of them, are lower-income people. And to me, the need for this level of functioning transportation systems is linked directly to keeping housing affordable. I don't see how you separate the two. And, the resistance to this, it feels like resistance to putting down the money that's mainly going to help low-income people.
My only concern with the light rail line, because all of that is 100% correct, my only concern with the light rail line is that it's singular. There's one line.
There's
so
one
if
line.
Your point A and point B are along that line, great. If either your point A or your point B or both are not on the line, then it's not as helpful for you.
Can you build out from a system like that after the base – after the first functioning
probably,
line is
established?
Probably,
but I don't know if that's the plan. I think the plan is
right.
the one line.
And
I mean, we're
line.
Talking about a one line that's going in what, 2030 or something like that.
Good
so
Lord.
We're already looking 10 years out. So
that's
the only thing – that's the only source of skepticism for me. Like, man, development is really going to have to build up around this particular
right.
line so that
right.
people's comings and goings are all along that one route. But beyond that, yeah, I think.
And then there needs
right.
to be a corridor between here and Wake County. I'm just telling you.
Agree with
I
that.
Do not understand why there's not an elevated train that's right along the meridian of I-40. If you've ever been to Chicago, you look at what they have there, and the L is right there in the middle of the highway.
Triangle around the triangle, right? Chapel Hill, Durham,
right.
Raleigh.
Right.
With the airport in the middle.
That's
and the
not rocket science.
Yeah.
I don't see why we can't get that eventually.
So that's number nine.
When you retire, that's what we'll get. And so, and here we are 12 minutes in, and we're going to take a quick break and figure out how we're going to squeeze the rest of this in. You're listening, thank goodness, to the Weekend Water Cooler with our wonderful guest, Aaron Keck, on 97.9 The Hill. Please don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Aaron Keck, and we're in this segment, we're going to cover a lot. Actually, we're going to blast through this like a hurricane.
Ooh, that's a good segue into our next.
Did you see what
item
I did there?
The
yeah.
List.
So
yeah.
I mean, did we not have just a blockbuster year in the weather? Starting with, and you reminded me of this. We got some pretty serious snow in January.
We started the year in January, so this is next
like
on our top
year.
10 list of local stories. We started the year in January with the biggest snowstorm in 18 years in terms of actual snowfall. We got a foot of snow. Hey, remember
wow.
that? Remember when that happened?
Can you believe
happened?
That? I just blocked that out. I mean, I probably ate hot chocolate every day, and it probably melted in 3 days. And
you shouldn't
but,
be
you know,
eating
you're
hot
right.
chocolate. You should pour that in water and mix it up and drink it.
Well, you know, what I remember now that you're reminding me is that we got stuck at the bottom of our street.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you know, I live in the county, and you know, there's no plowing of my street until it's all over.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once the street is 95% dry pavement, then a truck
the
comes up
yeah,
and they run
here.
Two or three. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the beginning of the year. And then the weather events that happened more recently that we may remember a little bit better is Hurricanes Florence and Michael back to back.
So
Hurricane Florence, which we were all super prepared for.
Yes.
And then didn't do a lot of damage in Orange County. And then Hurricane Michael, which snuck up on us and did a ton of damage.
And while we were just taking a bow saying, wow, we really dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
Although, you know, and in both cases.
Well, Hurricane Florence did damage right at the very end.
Yeah.
One last day.
Yeah. She has a way What do you call that? That was a vapor trail that she left mm-hmm. behind her. That was a very impressive. I love the graphic that showed the track of the storm and how it just sort of came in and was coming toward Durham and then took a left and went down into South Carolina. Yep. And it said Durham, not for everybody. And I thought, well, if it's hurricanes we're talking about, I think we're all okay with that. But yeah. I mean, that, that was impressive right around here, just the water. I mean, Brueggers, for example, I think at Eastgate. Thank you. I think it's still not open yet. I went by there the other day and they were still closed.
A lot of those businesses took a long time to reopen.
We had Mark Markopoulos on the show earlier this year, and he's got some pretty drastic ideas about what needs to happen with Eastgate. We need to get to the point and get it that we need a big idea for how to re-engineer that property and just do something completely different with it instead of putting businesses in there to drown every now and then.
Yeah.
It's just no good.
So that's weather. What's next?
That's weather. Next is UNC.
Yep.
All things UNC. Would you want to start with Margaret Spellings, Mac Brown?
Let's start with Mac Brown first, because I think we can.
Did you see that coming?
Yes.
Did you think UNC was going to say, who do we have in the Rolodex who's still alive?
I did not see Mac Brown necessarily coming, but the writing had been on the wall for Larry Fedora for the entire year.
Oh.
And here's the thing. Paul Connell is the host of On the Heels, which is our post-game, post-football game show. And we were talking, and I said, look, the firing of Larry Fedora seems to be coming. This was still during the season. But his response, and it was a good response, is that it's going to be too costly for UNC to spend all of this money to buy out the contract and then hire whoever needs to be
brought in. That's never a problem for UNC.
But if UNC is going to do that, if they're going to take that step and fire Larry Fedora, they're eating a lot of cost. They've already committed a lot of money to this new football training facility and renovating Keenan Stadium to put actual seats in. So you know that they're going all in financially on building up the football program and making it a powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it stands to reason that they're going to reach out and try to hire the biggest name powerhouse coach that they can. And
right.
who better than a guy with Carolina ties who has won a national championship,
who's not looking
college football
Hall of
Famer.
Not looking for the job for 10 years, probably.
Right. And that's Mac Brown. So they hire Mac Brown.
Because Butch Davis didn't answer the phone.
Oh, Butch Davis.
Well, you know.
Mac Brown, better hire, I
Listen,
think.
Butch Davis wouldn't come back because of the whole thing about the guys have to go to class now.
Yeah. Sick burn.
Oh.
all right. So that's Mac Brown. But let's talk about Margaret Spellings.
Let's talk about Margaret Spellings. How interesting that with what goes on that Margaret Spellings has said, I think I'm done.
I think she feels very comfortable in that decision.
I'm sure she does.
If I were her, I'd feel very comfortable about
decision. I wouldn't want to be hanging around. Since she can leave in such a healthy state financially and not have too many punches landed, and she's got a friendly board of governors that she's leaving behind, friendly to her, I mean, no?
How sarcastic is that?
It's pretty sarcastic.
Okay.
Do you think she has a boot on her rear end in leaving?
I don't know if she has a boot on her rear end so much as like the two are pushing against each other and they're both in wheelie chairs. So
at a certain point,
like they just start wheeling apart from
Something's
each other.
Got to give.
There's a lot of tension. And I assume, and this is the case, I think, with any company or organization, that the tension that bubbles over and becomes public is only a tiny, tiny portion of the actual tension that's going on behind the scenes that we don't know about.
I think there was
a lot of tension. I think she's very happy about being able to get out. Now the question is who's going to come
in. Here's the part about that irritates me is that at that level, that person needs to be a leader for the system and a leader among the Board of Governors. When you get into that kind of situation with that much tension, I expect a leader to step up and resolve issues and solve problems and not say, ooh, this is getting pretty tense. There's a lot of pushback. Time to go. Kind of bothers me.
I can see that. She's been in the office for, 3 years now? 3 years.
Yeah.
She has I mean, say what you will about Margaret Spelling, she did have a pretty decent list of accomplishments in those 3 years that she can walk out with.
She did better. She did do better than I thought she would.
Yeah,
I will say that for. Yeah.
I'm actually okay with Margaret Spelling's. I know we're on the liberal station.
We wish
I'm
her
not
well.
Supposed to say
we
that.
Wish her well.
I'm actually okay with Margaret.
I actually do hope
frustrated that she didn't do more on certain issues. Hashtag HB2, but hashtag Silent Sam,
right.
Which we'll get to.
Yeah,
we can't talk about 2018 locally without getting into that issue. So we're there in a few minutes.
Yeah,
but,
we certainly will. And also that's. She's the president of the system. This falls more to the chancellor, I think.
I'm more concerned with what happens next. I mean, Bill Roper's coming in on an interim basis, but I don't think he's in a position where he's going to take over the job on a permanent basis. By the end of 2019, we're going to have another system president, and it's not a name that we know yet. And who is that going to be?
I think it should be Aaron Keck.
Oh, God, no. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Not with a 10-foot pole.
not with a Duke degree under his belt. All right. So we'll roll along. We're going to – as soon as I get my tongue back in where it's supposed to be in the location of my mouth. So we're gonna move along. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to, branch out a little bit into the state level and talk about some things there that are really, really getting interesting. We're talking to Aaron Keck about it's the end of the year, and you know it. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back with Aaron Keck talking about all of the news stories of 2018. I'm getting exhausted. We're halfway through the show. So let's talk about the midterms.
All right.
I'll tell you, at the beginning of the year, I think that at least just for me as an observer of these things, I think that when Doug Jones got elected in the special election in Alabama.
That was 2017.
That was 2017.
That was 2017.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Really?
I think so.
I thought it was special election in early – see, this is going to be one of those things. We're going to look that up.
All right, we're going to look that up.
But what I'll say about that, there were several special elections and then primaries in early 2018 that when they went blue it made me think – that the momentum that appeared to have been created at the day after the inaugural and the Women's March and all this stuff, that maybe that really was real and that maybe the Democrats have gotten their mojo back about some things.
Yes.
Including recalibrating how they run elections and who gets nominated and so forth. So with that, I felt encouraged, but I think everybody was pretty nervous going into election day.
I think the Saturday Night Live sketch about that was a pretty good indication. Like all of the different people who were saying, "Oh, I'm 100% confident about it," and their hands were shaking,
right,
and coffee
right.
was spilling out of the cup.
Yeah, that's great.
And I think that's fair, just because we learned in 2016 that the polls, while fairly accurate, are not 100% accurate.
That margin of error thing is a real thing.
The margin of error thing is a real thing. So the polls in 2016 were actually quite accurate. They weren't off by that much, but it was a close enough race and it was off by just enough and just the right places that all of a sudden you have a very different outcome than what people were going in with. So 2018 rolls around. And we've got those early Democratic victories in the special elections, including Alabama, which was December 12th, 2017, by the way.
Okay, well, my bad.
Right at the very end of 2017. But there were a lot of 2018.
You took office in 2018.
In January of 2018. Yes, you're right.
Okay.
But there were a lot of special elections in 2018 that were going that way. And it looked more and more like it was going to be a good year for Democrats. But people get nervous heading into Election Day if they're not sure, especially when you've got an election that's so important and there's so much at stake that it draws as many voters out for a midterm as typically show up for a presidential election,
right.
which is unprecedented.
And everybody was worried that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think I put something on Facebook yesterday, retweeting or reposting something that that I had there was a News and Observer story in mid-October that said, oh, you know, the blue wave is not happening. Turnout in early voting is, you know, no better than it was in 2014 and this stuff. Well, you know, that didn't turn out to be right.
Yeah.
So I think that because there was so much at stake, that a lot of people just said, I'm just not paying attention to that. I've just got to keep shoulder to the wheel and just stop watching that stuff because I've just – you got to believe. I got to believe. I got to believe. And it really did materialize. I mean, people who liberals love lost their races, people like Claire McCaskill. But, you know, Claire McCaskill was always a pretty unlikely senator in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough seat for her to win and keep if she does her job the way she, you know, would promise to do her job, which
right.
is I'm going to do what I think is right, whether or not it helps me in re-election.
So let's talk North Carolina. It was a good year for Democrats in North Carolina. Every state-level judicial
right.
race, Anita Earls winning the state Supreme Court seat, but
right.
three races for state court of appeals that all went to Democrats. And that's particularly important, I think, because the state court of appeals gets a lot more cases than the state Supreme Court does. The way
right.
the judicial system is set up, a lot of the cases go over there. So as far to the extent that partisan control of courts is important in terms of the outcome of court cases, because you don't want it to be, but it is.
Right.
Democrats controlling the state court of appeals is at least as important as the state Supreme Court. But that state Supreme Court seat is going to be really important because while Democrats picked up enough seats in the state House and Senate to eliminate that veto-proof majority that Republicans had, they didn't pick up as many as they otherwise would because those districts are so heavily gerrymandered,
right.
Which means that the story of 2019 is going to be what is the state Supreme Court going to do
about these maps
when they get
yep.
that case, which they will
yep.
in 2019. And it's a state constitutional argument. And one of the lesser discussed stories, but I think extremely important, is the fact that this happened in Pennsylvania in 2018. The state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania got a case challenging partisan gerrymandering as a violation
right.
of the state constitution.
Right.
The state Supreme Court said, yes, that's correct. They ordered a redraw of the district lines. The U.S. Supreme Court didn't take that case because they don't. And you have a pretty significant shift in the Pennsylvania congressional makeup. We could see that again in 2020 in North Carolina.
Right.
We'll see.
That's going to be fascinating to watch. And pair that with this GOP mischief in the Ninth District. A story that is just getting bigger every day because one of these operators who worked for this candidate worked on multiple campaigns previously.
Yeah, we're going to be airing and re-airing this show a couple of times, and in the period in between the airing and the re-airing, there could be significant developments.
I mean, really, it's amazing, and of course, once again, local reporting on that issue has been a great feeder for the national news covering it and picking up the story. I saw a great little piece from the Washington Post saying, you know, wow, look at, you know, just getting into some of the details. They could never have done that without the local reporting to get them started by their own account. And, you know, we, the enemies of the people, you know, seem to be finding our footing a little bit. And you know, this in itself is kind of a nightmare for those in the GOP who have counted on the sensational quality of news over the last several years to keep the particulars out of sight and out of mind and just stick with, you know, what gets clicks and whatnot. So it could be that shift is actually happening. We won't know until we can look back in 5 years.
But the shenanigans in the 9th Congressional District are
unbelievable.
Unfortunately believable.
Unfortunately,
actually.
Right.
For all of the talk about voter fraud at the people showing up and claiming to be someone else and voting in their names, which doesn't happen.
Why bother with that? Yeah, when you
there
can do it
are
this
ways
way.
To screw with an election, and one of them apparently is to have an operation wherein you go around claiming pick up absentee ballots from people and then just either throwing them out if you don't like who the person
in the trunk
voted
of your car,
for, which apparently happened, filling out some unfinished ballots, which apparently happened. Did it affect the outcome of the 9th District congressional election? Who knows? Maybe.
And this the GOP
Harris
candidate
won by
900
votes.
The GOP candidate in this race is a minister. Is that not correct?
Yes.
I wonder how much
possibly
longer.
Possibly in scare quotes, but yes.
I wonder how much longer that'll be true.
Probably for a while.
Oh, bless his heart. Yeah. He's got a nice haircut. You have to give him that, right? Okay, maybe
I don't.
You
don't think I've ever seen a picture of Mark Harris.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's video of him running constantly all over, you know. I mean, now that they can run stories about dopey North Carolinians screwing up an election, you know, that's pretty easy stuff for the cable news.
Does that mean I have to start watching cable news in order to see video?
No,
of Mark
I watch
Harris,
it so you
okay,
don't have
good,
to.
Okay, good, good.
That's
yeah.
right. I make the sacrifice for WCHL.
Don't watch cable news, America. Doesn't matter what channel.
I'm watching it so you don't have to. It's just, you know, it's just, you know, I'm not
bad.
Asking. I'm not asking for a medal, but I kind of think I should get one. I'm just saying. Okay, well, we're gonna come back and wrap this up with our what we think is probably the biggest local story. I bet you can guess what it is. You're
so.
Listening to the Weekend Water Cooler. On 97.9 The Hill. Don't move. We're coming right back. And we're back, wrapping up with Aaron Keck. And we're just gonna get to this simple conversation about 2018 Chapel Hill, Orange County.
We're talking about the top local stories.
The top local stories, the Confederate flag and Silent Sam. And then branching out from that, the students,
yeah.
the students in all of these communities and students just generally, you know, I'm a little bit involved in the Confederate flag controversy in Orange County, in the schools in Orange County. And I will just summarize this as simply as possible. It's complicated. It's not complicated when it comes to, do the schools have consensus that they want the freaking flag out of the schools and not part of the daily learning environment? There's absolute consensus on that. That is not a controversial piece. The main individuals who would come to a meeting and speak on behalf of keep the flag in school and nonsense about protecting historical reference. These are mainly people from outside of the Orange County School District, Alamance activists, which is not an insult to Alamance County. It's just that this is where this group mainly came from. I think that there's generally consensus. But then what you do from that to address the larger issue of racial inequity in the school district and try to bring these things into better alignment. Man, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And smart and well-intended people from multiple backgrounds, not necessarily in disagreement, but multiple backgrounds with very different experiences as parents in the district and so forth, are working on this. I'm one of them. I'm telling you, it's hard work.
Mm.
It's work that's not going to be rewarded with a big round of applause. You know, when you come up with something that's bound to make each side not particularly thrilled with this part or that part. But that's the way forward. You have to get everybody at the table and just try to grind through what these areas of conflict, and when I say conflict, I mean mainly in the perspective that you're coming from. I can't articulate the perspective of growing up as an African American person in the South. I just don't have that experience, and I wouldn't attempt to speak to it. I have opinions about it, but they're limited. I limit them because I'm like, you know, okay, I think maybe this, but I don't really know. And I need the people who know to be at that table and fleshing that out. So there's that happening. And then not unrelated is Silent Sam. Why in the world, UNC, did it take for the students to return in the fall and have somebody go up and bring down that statue in protest? Why didn't they take it down over the summer? Why? Aaron, why? You know the answer to this, I'm sure.
I will say this. It is a very easy thing for someone to say to, in this case, Carol Fold, you should choose this hill to die on.
Right.
It is very difficult to be that person and make that choice. And I think if the chancellor and UNC Chapel Hill officials and UNC system officials, including Margaret Spellings, had actually done the right thing and taken the statue down, that would have been the hill they died on, right?
Probably.
The General Assembly would have come down very hard on the university. The Board of Governors almost certainly would. Carol Folt would probably have lost her job for doing that. So it's
she
very,
may lose her job for not doing that.
She may lose her job for not doing that, right. This might end up being the hill no matter what.
Right.
It's difficult for me to really fault someone for making that decision that this isn't worth it to them. I get it. It was also the wrong thing not to do.
Yeah.
It was 100% the wrong thing not to do. And it's and we're still in that situation today where UNC officials are going out of their way to protect the monument. And those are not my words. That is a direct verbatim quote from the appendix of the report that UNC's Board of Trustees issued and signed off on nearly unanimously about what to do with the statue now, which is to construct a $5 million building, which will look like we know not what, to house the monument and put it in historical context, which means
Put signs up and say this was bad, but we have it.
And then to create a $2 million mobile police force with, I think, an $800,000 annual budget. Don't quote me on that, but it's something like that. It's in the appendix. To protect the monument. And that, again,
this is
verbatim quote.
This is just an inexcusable proposed use of taxpayer dollars. I mean, that money's not coming from a grant from the White Pride Foundation, is it? Or do we know? This is going to be university.
It's going to be university
taxpayer
money.
Funded.
So we were talking about this before. The school that did this correctly, and Margaret Spellings, to her credit, in the initially private and then they became public email exchanges with Carol Folt said Texans are smarter. And in this case, they are, because it was UT Austin that did it right. They took their statue down. They put it back up again, but they put it back up in – and it was university officials that did this. University officials taking the lead saying this is the right thing. Here's what we're going to do.
Right.
They took the statue down. They put it back up again. They put it back up in a – clear museum context,
right,
where this is now being presented as a historical museum piece with signage and plackage accordingly.
Right. That makes sense.
And if that ends up being what this building looks like in 3 years when it goes back up again, okay, maybe.
I mean, if this
but
is like –
we the, don't know. We
if this
don't
is
know.
The North Carolina Museum of Terrible Decisions, then that's fine. You know, if it's the history of Jim Crow museum, then that's fine. I've been to the Holocaust Museum in Washington several times, and there's a place.
Yes.
There's a place for this kind of artifact. But you know, I'm not okay with it until I know it's that place. And to me, if that place existed already, this belongs as an exhibit in that place. And in the meantime, I think it belongs with the Indiana Jones treatment at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Being looked at by top men.
Being looked at by top men.
Yeah.
And in fact, being in a crate that's among 50 million crates and can never be located again.
I know we're running out of time. Let me say this. The justification for what they're doing with Silent Sam is that 2015 Objects of Remembrance law. That 2015 Objects of Remembrance law does not really apply to this case. And again, getting back to people are not making the arguments that they believe. I don't think UNC officials believe that it applies in this case. The Objects of Remembrance law says the thing's got to go back up in 90 days. We're already past that. by directive of the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors said take beyond 90 days. The law says it's got to go back up in a place of equal prominence. That isn't happening according to this proposal, nor was it ever going to happen. And that law applies to what university officials can do. It does not say what university officials have to do if students take it upon themselves to pull the statue down. Right. So the law does not apply in this case. I think UNC officials are using the law in order to avoid saying what the real truth is, which is this is as good as we can do with Silent Sam without the Board of Governors and possibly also the General Assembly bringing down the hammer and firing all of the Saturday Night Massacre, firing Archibald Cox and putting in people who will do what they want with it.
Right.
I think that's the reality.
I think you're probably right.
But to be honest, if we were following the law, then UNC officials will have to leave Silent Sam exactly where it is, which is currently in storage
in an undisclosed,
location in an undisclosed building forever.
That works for me.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I can live with it. Okay. Well, I thank you for the hour, and we're going to be back next week with even more to say about people and places on a different level, and how the year turned out on the national political scene. There's not much to talk about there. Probably just another sleepy show talking about our great public servants and members of Congress cooperating together and making our lives better. Go back to sleep. You've been dreaming again. Okay. Thanks for joining us on The Water Cooler. Thank you, Aaron. And we'll all be back next week. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.